21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
The first day we biofueled up my Founding Fathers Art car has gone down in my book as a red-letter day, thanks to a dedicated bunch of volunteers at the Baltimore Biodiesel Co-op. Baltimore now has our own dispensing biogas pump available to our community, and anyone with a diesel vehicle can fuel up today and enjoy the benefits of fuel from U.S. farms instead of foreign oil. Of course, you should do your research first, and the best way to do that is to join the Baltimore Biodiesel Co-op. Visit www.baltimorebiodiesel.org. That's baltimorebiodiesel.org. No wars required.
Hi, this is Shirley MacLaine. Happy 20th anniversary to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
I'm on a mission for the King. He told me to smile, and he told me to sing. And I can't get around here doing my own thing. For I'm on a mission for the King.
Well, that's one of my all-time favorites, friends. You could see me in the back of the choir there. See that little kid over there belting this out, the Slim and the Supreme Angels. Oh, my. And this is 21st Century Radio. Just thought I'd tell you that. I'm the alleged Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD, trying to locate his place in this part of the universe, having some trouble sometimes, as usual. Our executive producer, who is the boss of the universe around here, is Laura Courtner, and our engineer can bench press over 628 pounds, holding a world's record at Johns Hopkins University. And what are the Slim and the Supreme Angels saying there, friends? You can't stand around here doing your own thing. That's really what they're saying. Plus, each and every one of us has a mission, a purpose, a meaning, destiny. It's your destiny. Of course it is. This is your life. This is your movie. This is it, guys. Well, real one, or maybe real 755. Now, our guest for the remainder of the show is Dr. William Richards. The Johns Hopkins Behavioral Biology Research Center study of hallucinogens for terminal and cancer patients. You don't have to be terminally ill. We'll review that again. Go to www.cancer-insight.org or call 410-550-5990. Now, Bill, your current project with cancer patients is looking for referrals from the local area. And listeners can learn more as at the website I noted there, cancer-insight.org. But could you tell us briefly, just review a little bit more, what kind of people would qualify for your study and what they could expect as a volunteer?
Sure, I'd be very happy to talk about that because we really do need volunteers. We do have openings for volunteers, and though people come from all over the country, it's especially nice to have people who live in the Baltimore, Washington area. Clearly, you have to have a history of a diagnosis of cancer. Any form of cancer is acceptable. And you have to have some degree of psychological distress, which isn't hard to have if you indeed have cancer. We need people who are not at the present time in the midst of a course of radiation therapy or chemotherapy, though people receiving hormonal therapy can be accepted. for those in the midst of chemotherapy or radiation, we would hope that they could perhaps participate in our project either after the treatment regimen is complete or between units of treatment. As I mentioned earlier, we need people who are don't have histories of serious mental illness, people who don't have recent history of alcohol or drug addiction. But that opens up the study to a lot of people. The age range is, I believe, 21 to 70. Both men and women are welcome to apply. Certainly all races and cultural backgrounds and all religious backgrounds or non-religious backgrounds are very welcome. And one would apply by going to the website cancer-insight.org and or calling Mary Casamano, our research coordinator.
At 410-550-5990.
That's the number.
Okay, so...
People can self-refer. People can, tell family members or friends about the study who may be interested, who can call and investigate whether this is something they would want to do. Physicians certainly are welcome to make referrals as well. Once a person is referred, they're kind of screened on the telephone about the most basic criteria, to make sure they're in the right age range and the like. And then they come in. If they pass that, they come in for a physical exam and some psychological tests of basic data collection for research purposes. And they read the informed consent document, and we answer all their questions. And if they decide that this is something they want to do, then they're formally entered into the study. And everyone receives roughly, say, about 8 hours of preparation for the experience, where you kind of build a relationship of trust with a trained guide who accompanies you through the study and prepares you very explicitly for the psilocybin experience of talking about the whole range of different things that can happen and how to most productively and constructively respond to whatever should occur. And then when enough trust and is established, the session is scheduled, and we administer the drug in a very pleasant living room type of environment at Hopkins. It's not a world of white coats and stethoscopes. It's a very comfortable place with a nice stereo and nice art on the wall and two very sensitive, trained guides who are with each volunteer throughout the entire period of drug action, so no one is ever left alone during the period of drug action. And basically, people are encouraged to collect experiences. You recline on a couch with stereophonic headphones and eye shade and soak up a wonderful program of basically classical music that we found is most facilitative of the deeper forms of consciousness we hope to facilitate.
Whose music would that be?
Well, it's varied. Things like Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings, some Bach, some Brahms, some little Mozart, and in the latter hours, you know, a little bit of everything from the Beatles onward of, you know, lighter, more popular music. But we found that some of the classical music is most effective, even for people who ordinarily wouldn't listen to it, in helping them get beyond the everyday personality into these deeper, more transcendental states of awareness. So there's a real science to the choice of music that we use. So anyway, just taking you further through the way the study proceeds, as the six-hour psilocybin experience ends, the person does some psychological tests and then goes home in the company of a trusted friend or relative for the evening, comes in the next day for debriefing, and then we have a week or two of sessions kind of integrating, talking through whatever occurred, and then a second psilocybin session occurs. Every cancer patient receives psilocybin on two different occasions, and the dose may be the same or different in the two double-blindly designed times when psilocybin is administered. And then after the second time, of course, there's integration time, and then we keep in contact, and I think there's a six-month follow-up point. So we would want people to have at least, if they are terminal, to be ambulatory and have at least a six-month prognosis to participate in the study. But that's basically it. We do everything we can to maximize the probability of benefit and make it maximally safe.
I think with such an experience, you would have to have guides.
Yes.
You would have to. This is what I think most younger people don't seem to understand. Well, I won't get into that now, but I'm hesitating right now. Can we take an early break? Because this next question is going to ensue a lot of discussion here. What the question is, and you can brush up on this. So you want to get ready for this?
Because okay.
there is a final exam. You know, I've already warned you about that. But check out this particular question for your oral exam. Would you try to explain the experience produced by taking psilocybin when it turns into a mystical experience? Okay?
Sure.
Okay, you do your research and come back and report. You got about a few minutes here.
Okay, Bob.
All right. We'll be back with our guest. Dr. William Richards, the Johns Hopkins Behavioral Biology Research Center study of hallucinogens for terminal cancer patients. Of course, as we've already said numerous times, you don't have to be terminally ill with cancer. That's www.cancer-insight.org. Cancer-insight.org, 410-550-5990. And I think I'm hearing little birds here, which also always puts me in an altered state. It really is one of my greatest weaknesses, listening to the birds outside. Maybe you guys should listen to them too. Maybe they put you in an altered state as well. UnitedSymbolismOfAmerica.com is the place to go to check out my latest book, a beautiful gallery of over 70 illustrations with many in color, plus ones we didn't have room for in the print version. Read some of the intriguing stories and other content we cut from the book for lack of space. Order an autographed copy online along with coffee mugs, pins, medallions, and other books available only at UnitedSymbolismOfAmerica.com. See the reviews of my latest book from Willie Nelson, Shirley MacLaine, George Norrie, Graham Hancock, Stanley Krippner, and many more. UnitedSymbolismOfAmerica.com. Check it out today.
Give what you can and take what you want at the Baltimore Free Store. The Free Store takes donated items and redistributes them throughout Baltimore free of charge. Do you have extra stuff laying around your house that someone else could use? Give it. Do you need things for your house, for your closet, or even for your art project? Take it. The Baltimore Free Store is an environmentally friendly way of redistributing goods and empowering the community. For more information, visit www.baltimorefreestore.org. That's baltimorefreestore.org or call 410-340-9004. That's 410-340-9004.
Hello, this is Stanley Krippner. I'm professor of psychology at Saybrook Graduate School in San Francisco on behalf of 21st Century Radio, run by Dr. Bob Hieronymus. And I would certainly encourage listeners to stay tuned because you will hear things on 21st Century Radio that you'll hear nowhere else on the airwaves.
Well, hey, there he is, Dr. Stanley Krippner. The boss of me. That's right. Oh, yes. We had some wonderful times. You know, this is 21st Century Radio, you might have guessed. And I understand soon we hope to give you the date of the airing of Secret America on Discovery Channel. It's a two-hour production based on my book, United Symbols of America. .com. I always, yeah, that's the website, of course, but United Symbols of America. And soon after that, after Discovery Channel's released, then the ones dealing with the ones I've done with the History Channel will be done, I think, somewhere in April, May, somewhere around there. Now, our guest, of course, is Dr. William Richards, the Johns Hopkins Behavioral Biology Research Center study of hallucinogens. For terminal cancer patients and non-terminal cancer patients, www.cancer-insight.org, 410-550-5990. Now we've numbered them all out. That's right, we do. We're numbering them. Bill, now let's try to explain the experience produced by taking psilocybin when it turns into a mystical experience.
Sure. Just backing up a tiny bit. Let me stress that, you know, there are three types of experiences that people find significantly helpful. And that includes kind of psychodynamic experiences where they deal with, you know, guilt and grief and anger and the stuff that causes depression and anxiety and ordinary psychotherapy, and that whole realm can be visited and sometimes very rapid psychotherapeutic change can be facilitated. So there's that realm. And then there's what we call the visionary archetypal realm, where that's kind of at the threshold of the ordinary ego, the ordinary everyday personality within us, and these transcendental dimensions of consciousness. And that's where people often see visions of, you know, visions of the Christ or of Buddha and Bodhisattvas or of Greek gods or kind of the characters of the world religions are pretty populated down within us somewhere. And also visions of things like precious stones. You may know the old essay by Aldous Huxley, "Why Are Precious Stones Precious?" And he argues it's because they remind us of the eternal beauty of the inner diamonds and sapphires within us. Or in the book of Revelation, there's also reference to the golden streets and the very beautiful visionary world. And that type of experience does occur, and people find those encounters incredibly inspiring. There's often mental imagery, very much like a Gothic architecture or a great Islamic domes of just infinite symmetry that are very awe-inspiring. But even in these visionary states, there's usually a sense of the everyday personality still being present, perhaps feeling very humble, very awed, very inspired, but it's the person is here looking at something there. So it's what philosophers call the subject-object dichotomy. It's still present. And then beyond that is where people really enter into what we call mystical consciousness. And that entails the a more complete transcendence of the everyday personality. We talk about the death and the rebirth of the ego, of really leaving the ego behind and becoming part of something greater than yourself. You know, the Hindus have the image of the drop of water merging with the ocean. And it's sort of like that, the sense of feeling an increasing relatedness to consciousness deep within us that is universal or beyond the limits of the individual human life. And that's where you know, people who experience that often they talk about unity, this sense of consciousness getting broader and broader and broader until you become a part of something greater than yourself. They talk of transcendence of time and space, not just that you're not aware of time and space, but that you feel as though the consciousness is eternal or infinite, that this is where the concepts of eternity and infinity come from people who have experienced this type of thing, as though you're outside of history. And some people claim it's almost as though you can look back on history. So it's an incredibly profound experience of being outside of time, which is hard for us to think of because time is part of the Kantian categories with which we experience everyday life. But as you can imagine, for someone, especially coming to terms with the reality of death, to experience something beyond time that feels very wonderful is incredibly inspiring and comforting.
Comforting, yes, indeed. Would you say, because your expertise before you got deeply involved in this work was in comparative religions, is that correct?
Yes.
Would you say that when you get to the point of the mystical consciousness that there is a, well, I'm biased about this, but a great unity amongst all the religions in this particular area?
Yes. Where you can see the religious systems as different, incredibly rich collections of traditions and stories and very profound truths, but you can begin to grasp how, even though you own your own path, but whatever it happens to be, for me personally, I grew up Christian and I speak the Christian language, and Christianity is very meaningful to me. But I can also worship in a Hindu temple. that there's a sense that the what Paul Tillich called the really real God really not only is real, but is unitive, is one, mm-hmm. and has manifested in many different ways in different religious systems. So one of the, I talked of the intuitive knowledge that goes with this state of consciousness, and part of that is indeed, you know, the reality of God, or if you don't like the word God, you can call it the void, or you can call it nothingness, or you can call it the ground of being, or the core of being, or the force, or the source, the noun you choose to talk about. It doesn't matter so much as this conviction that there indeed is something that is incredibly real and incredibly trustworthy and magnificent, that we are all ultimately somehow connected to within consciousness. And another aspect of that intuitive knowledge, in when these unitive experiences occur, there's also a sense of the interrelatedness of all people, or what we call the brotherhood of man in religious language, and that has profound ethical ramifications and perhaps profound implications for world peace and for the respect of different religious systems and cultures for one another. So that whereas you may own your own religious tradition and find profound meaning in it and profound truth in it, you can also sense that God, the really real God, if you will, is even bigger than your tradition, and that other religious traditions have their own richness and rich traditions, and there's much we could learn from one another. So it opens up a whole new era, almost, in the study of comparative religions. Houston Smith has manifested this very well in his scholarship and his life, and attributes his own experiences with psychedelic drugs decades ago in part of his inspiration of how he can write about, you know, Islam or Hinduism or Buddhism or Christianity or Judaism or Zoroastrianism, you name it, from a really deep appreciative viewpoint from within the tradition. And there's just none of this 10 reasons why my way is better than your way. It's right. I honor my way, but I also honor your way.
Well, I can't. That is so, so important. I'm so glad we had a chance to touch on this evening, because the psilocybin experience, as you note, it's this experience is in us. It's not the drug.
That's right.
And as we go through the psychodynamic phase and the personal struggle, it's really would be super important, in my opinion, to have guides nearby,
mm-hmm.
who know exactly like what the struggle is, and of course the already knowing what the path is, it's much safer that way than ever before. And then, of course, as you pass through the visionary archetypal realm and be dazzled by the, not just the colors, but the scene, the patterns, of the unifying structure of the tetrahedral universe, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And one of the fascinating things about that is how people often experience and report visionary imagery that is not part of their life history. Or their personal enculturation.
That's right.
You know, which yeah. really appears to be like empirical support for Carl Jung's idea of the collective unconscious, that within each of us, and no matter what Sunday school we went to or whether we went to none at all, that there's this wealth of the symbols of many, if not all, of the great world religions and philosophical traditions that are just within us, whether that's genetically encoded somehow or whether we access it in a spiritual world, whatever that means. Maybe the physicists can help us understand that sometimes. But the feeling is that we are so much more than we ordinarily think ourselves to be, that it is incredibly awe-inspiring.
Well, yeah, I just, you know, the rise of Carl Jung in the popular sense, now there are little dolls. There are little movable action figure dolls of Carl Jung.
Hmm.
Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not.
Doesn't that make you happy?
Well, not especially.
Well, it makes me happy.
I think we want to look where Jung was looking, not look at Jung.
Yeah, but at least we want to know that people, other people know that he existed, because unfortunately it's taken a while for people to wake up to this particular aspect of it.
That's right.
But as I was saying, you go through the psychodynamic, the visionary archetypal realm, then you enter the mystical consciousness, and that's where I think one of the, if you don't mind my saying this, I think one of the greatest things that you have contributed in this particular work is you're having the ability to know, comparative religions, not just from the nuts and bolts, but the mystical aspects of it, where they are unified.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's really key to there being one people on one planet, so why in the hell are we beating each other up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it doesn't, from that naive sense, it doesn't make any sense at all if we're all from one family. And I think that's one of the great things about Christ's teachings from that standpoint. Now, you've had your own mystical experience. Is this correct?
I would own up to that.
Yes. Yeah, you're going to own up to it after we come back from our final break of the hour with our guest, Dr. William Richards, who's going to give us true confessions. 21st Century Radio, the Johns Hopkins Behavioral Biology Research Center study of hallucinogens for terminal and non-terminal cancer patients, www.cancer-insight.org, or call 410-550-5990.
Zoe Hieronymus here. Visit my website, www.zoharaonline.com. That's Zohara, Z-O-H-A-R-A, online.com. Find podcasts of decades of radio interviews, journalism, and photography. Find links to experts worldwide and in Maryland for subjects that range from where to sail in Maryland to the latest in UFOs. Find out about artificial intelligence and spiritual pathways. Zohara Online is a hub for finding books, people, and organizations in the business of doing good. It's always an adventure without reservations. Visit my website, www.zoharaonline.com.
Hi, this is Stephen Schwartz, and it's a pleasure to be here tonight talking with Bob Hieronymus on one of the most exciting radio programs that I know in the country. 21st Century Radio is really a place where you will get good information from things that matter in your life and that will give you an insight into who you are and why you're here.
Hey, that was Uncle Steve. Uncle Steve. Great work, Uncle Steve. Hey, we haven't heard from Ingo Swann tonight? No. How come? I'd like to hear from him again. I don't think he smokes cigars anymore. Well, our guest is Dr. William Richards, the Johns Hopkins Behavioral Biology Research Center study of hallucinogens for terminal and non-terminal cancer patients, www.cancer-insight.org. and 410-550-5990. So you're going to confess, and it's about time, Bill. It's about time. Would you like to tell us about your own mystical experience and how it transformed your work?
Sure. Well, you know, what comes to mind first is the line from the Chinese scriptures, the Tao Te Ching. It says, "Those who know do not speak; those who speak do not know." You know?
Yeah.
And that comes out of the profound ineffability and incredible beauty of these states of consciousness. And many of your listeners, even those who, there are probably many who have not taken psychedelic drugs, who also have experienced these states. You know, they occur in just spontaneously. They occur in meditation. They occur in natural childbirth. They occur in artistic performance or athletic feats of excellence. There's all different ways that these things come about. And when these deep experiences occur, there's this basic sense of ineffability, that they really cannot be put into words. And also something incredibly self-validating, like you don't have to prove to anyone else that that it happened. Some people may fear that they're losing their sanity if they don't have anyone to, any framework to understand it. But it's something very deep and profound, and it stays with you typically for a lifetime. And getting back to your very pointed question here, and fortunately I can talk freely about it because back when I first took psilocybin, it was legal. and I received it in the context of a research project at the University of Göttingen in Germany in the early 1960s. I had a couple of friends who had participated in a study in the psychiatric division of the university. And one had experienced himself sitting in his father's lap, and his father had been killed in the war, and it was very meaningful to him. And another had had interesting visions of SS men marching in the streets and so on. And there was a stage in my life where I was perhaps quite unwisely going without breakfast to study my dreams and was collecting my own data about my inner world and trying to study it to indeed be a good psychologist and using my own inner laboratory as much as I could. So I thought that these experiences sounded interesting and maybe I'd get some insight into my childhood. So I went to the university, and this was before the importance of a supportive set and setting. Good preparation was recognized. These were the days where they were just giving psychedelic drugs to people and watching them and finding that most people got psychotic. So they thought the drugs might well produce a mild psychosis. But it was not the drug, it was the way they were using the drug that was causing the psychoses. But anyway, I passed the screening, and they gave me an injection of psilocybin. Actually, we don't use injections. We use pills of the synthesized molecule. But in those days, I received an injection and was basically left alone in a little basement room. And I think I drew on my childhood Protestant piety of being ready to face anything that I needed to experience to be a more self-actualizing person, thinking it would be some childhood trauma of one kind or another. And to my utter surprise, what opened up was this incredibly profound, transcendental, mystical type of consciousness, which I didn't even know was possible at the time. And, of course, I wrote a report for the researchers, and I became known in the clinic as that interesting American who had the mystical experience. but the dosage they were using was quite low, and I think it what enabled me to experience that instead of just having a panic reaction was basically the spiritual intent or this act of surrender or trust to something greater than myself. And, of course, that is built into our preparation of volunteers now to be prepared to and not have to, you know, be in control or censor everything, but to be totally open and at home and trusting as the drug takes effect and opens up these, the potential of exploring these other worlds. So anyway, I had a very profound experience and then became a volunteer in the clinic, and my interest and involvement in the research dates back to that time.
And so you assisted others in this process as well, as you
right. And way back in the early 1960s, of course, the drugs were still legal, and then they became illegal in the United States, but they were still legal in Germany. And so there would be English-speaking religious or psychiatric professionals who wanted the opportunity to experience the drug, and they would come to Göttingen. And I would, because I spoke English and apparently had some empathic skills that were valued back then, I would be asked to guide them through their sessions. And that's how I started becoming a guide of people in exploring alternate realities.
Now, also in your work, you know who person I should have mentioned a little earlier, of course, was Roland Griffiths, the designer of the Hopkins psilocybin study.
Right.
Please
tell
us about him.
Roland is our principal investigator. He is the one with the most sophisticated design knowledge and who has the well-established credentials, not only with Hopkins, but with the FDA, and has been doing research with all kinds of Schedule One or limited drugs that are limited for research use for over 30 years. And we make a great team. He has the experimental design and administrative knowledge necessary for this research. I've had the clinical knowledge about how to go about implementing it. And we're both very dedicated meditators. And it's been a wonderful relationship.
Well, I'd like to return to the aspect of death.
Okay.
Because in some of the material that I've read, that you've written, you've had some individuals undergo some very important transcendent experiences. Would you, in the limited time that we have left, which is like about 3.5 minutes.
Okay, I will talk quite fast.
Okay. You're a real fast talker, Bill.
Okay. Listen, for people who experience this mystical state of consciousness, there usually is an intuitive conviction that life is more than we ordinarily think it to be, that indeed there is some form of immortality. It's not necessarily closely defined. Some may see it as reincarnation type of thing. Some may see it as more personal immortality. Some may see it as much more abstract, that what is most But the feeling is that what is most important never gets lost. Mm-hmm. And that ultimately the universe is indeed a loving and benign place. And in spite of its all the struggles of human life, that somehow there really is a deeper structure, a deeper meaning. Christians have this line, he's got the whole world in his hands. But it's that type of feeling that there's kind of an ultimate harmony, an ultimate safety. And that makes facing death much less frightening. It becomes more of a matter of curiosity, of acceptance, with a sense of trust and openness rather than fear. And also family relations are often deepened as people go through this study, and there's a much deeper sense of closeness with family members, even as people are preparing to let go and say goodbye to family members if they are terminally ill. So there's a... it's just profoundly meaningful for many people. And we're very happy to have this research alive again. It had been dormant for about 25 years, and it's very wonderful to be doing it.
Well, I'll say, I think it's extremely interesting that around this time period, a time I think when we need it more than ever, for us to begin to understand what happens to us when we leave our physical bodies, and the reduction of the fear and understanding will make a very big difference in the quality of life for all people here on planet Earth. And unfortunately, we're just about out of time, Bill, but I certainly have enjoyed it. And I'm glad we had a little bit more time than we originally were going to have. I don't see how we could have covered all of this. Because this is, in my opinion, one of the most important aspects of anything that Johns Hopkins has ever done over the years.
There are many wonderful things going on at Hopkins, but I like to think this is one of them.
Oh, well, there's no doubt that this is. So, again, excuse me there. Dr. William Richards, the Johns Hopkins Behavioral Biology Research Center study of hallucinogens for terminal and non-terminal cancer patients. Go to www.cancer-insight.org. 410-550-5990. Thank you for joining us, Bill.
Most powerful names in talk on Talk Radio 680 WCBM, Baltimore.
From ABC News.